Welcome to the Weekly Insight Podcast, where we break down the noise of the week and help you understand the psychology of the markets with your host, Andrew Doerr at Insight Wealth Group.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us on the latest edition of the Weekly Insight Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Andrew Doerr. I appreciate you taking some time to join us this week to hear about our thoughts on the market and the economy. I'll start off, as I do every week, with a shout out to the Compliance Department and just remind you that what you are about to hear today should not be construed as individual investment advice, but instead should be just some information for you to think about as you think about your portfolio. And if you would like to discuss how it might apply to your portfolio, we'd be happy to sit down and have a conversation about that. So with that, let's take a dive in. I'm happy. I don't know if you recall last week's podcast, but last week I was a little grumpy. I was a little upset. And my, what a week can do. The election's over, first of all. Thank goodness. So sick of all the political ads and everything else. Except for our clients in Georgia. My apologies, folks in Georgia. You guys got to put up with it for another month. But the world did not end. And we got through the election, which was great. And then we got some fantastic news on inflation. And those two events were really what drove us to what I would call a tremendous week in the markets this week. In fact, Thursday was the single best day in the market since the initial recovery in 2020. So it was notable. Unlike the week of the Fed meeting, last week everything kind of went how we wanted it to go. So let's break it down. Let's talk through those two big issues. So let's start on the election. It's official. The American people voted and the result was overwhelming. They hate politicians. I think we're all there at this point, right? I mean, the last 8 or 10 years, I think everyone's just so fed up. I mean, we're all fed up in our own camps, but we're all fed up, and we're not going to dive into any particular party affiliation issue here today. That's not what you guys come here for. But in all seriousness, neither party could generate any sort of consensus of support, especially in the swing states. No one really got a lot of momentum. A month ago, supposedly the Democrats were in the driver's seat. A week ago, supposedly the Republicans were in the driver's seat and we were talking about a red wave. And the result was really not much changed. It really didn't. In the House, while it does look like the GOP is going to take the majority, it's not going to be much to write home about. If I were Kevin McCarthy, I wouldn't be particularly proud. As of Sunday afternoon, the GOP had won or is expected to win 217 seats. You need 218 for a majority. The Democrats are currently sitting at about 213. So that leaves us five seats, five toss-ups, with the Republican candidate really in four of those ahead already. So technically, the Democrats could run the table. The Democrats could win all five of those seats and find themselves in a position where they still held a very slim one-vote majority. I don't think that's probably very likely, but either way, whatever happens in the House is going to be incredibly tight. Even if McCarthy were to win all five of those seats and the Republicans end up with a 222 to 213 margin, that's not a particularly great margin in a House that's pretty divided even within the caucuses. And then on the Senate side, the Democrats officially locked in a victory in Arizona and one in Nevada over the weekend. That does get the Democrats over to 50 seats. So it's right now 50 to 49D with the Georgia race between Walker and Warnock going to runoff, which will take place on December 6th. So much like 2020, in 2022, the fate of the United States Senate still rests in Georgia's hands. If Walker wins, we have the same 50-50 Senate that we had the last 2 years. If Warnock wins, actually the Democrats will pick up one seat. But either way, the Democrats are going to be in control of the Senate with, at the very least, VP Harris as the tie-breaking vote in a 50-50 Senate. So I've been harping for a long time on this podcast that the idea that markets love divided government. So no matter what the outcome of those final six races, five in the House and one in the Senate, we've got it. We've got divided government. With historically slim margins, though, in both houses, I think that it's very unlikely they're going to be able to advance any significant policy in the House or in the Senate that could get bipartisan support over the next couple of years. And that's really what people like, right? That's really what the market's looking for. Just don't mess with us. As long as we know the rules of the game for the next 2 years, we'll be happy and we can go focus on business instead of worrying about what Washington is going to do to us. Now, the one place that this might bite us, the one place where such an evenly divided Congress might bite us, is on the debt ceiling. The current authorization for the debt ceiling will run out sometime in the first quarter of next year. Now, that's a very fungible date, depending on how quickly the debt grows. But if the ceiling is not lifted, the U.S. will default on our debt, which is a very, very bad thing. Now, we won't dive into what that would mean on this podcast. If we get closer and it looks like it might happen, we might have to devote a whole episode to that. But right now, we just need to know that the Democrats have said that they want to raise the debt ceiling in this lame duck Congress before the new Congress takes power in January. Now, the Republicans have said they intend to put up a fight on that. So we're going to watch this closely, but we just need to know that at a time when we're starting to crawl out of a few other holes with the market right now, not raising the debt ceiling would be a pretty substantial issue that we'd have to pay very close attention to. Never happened before. So let's move on from that and start talking about inflation, because inflation is falling. We have talked a lot on this podcast about why myself and the team at Insight thought that inflation was already falling and would continue to fall compared to the peak, certainly in CPI, much earlier this year. The problem has been one not of the data to back us up, but frankly, one of expectations. Every month, we've kind of missed the goal, if you will. We've missed the expectation of inflation. And the market, the economists who look at this, were certainly hoping for better data. And the data came in good, but not good enough. And so we've kind of just been chasing our tails on inflation for a long, long time. While things are improving, they just weren't improving rapidly enough to force the Fed's hand and shift Fed policy, which is by far the biggest driver in the market this year. Now, on Thursday, we got what we've been waiting for, a significant beat of the inflation expectations. Bluntly, the numbers were not just good, they were really, really good. It was the biggest surprise to the downside or to the shrinking of inflation in the last decade. It was a huge, huge move, and it was one of the biggest surprises really over the last 20 or 30 years. So it was a good deal. And the market, of course, loved it. The message from nearly every outlet was that the peak is in for inflation. Well, I kind of disagree with that. The peak was in a while ago, but now the market's realizing it because we've beaten expectations. And I understand the sentiment, because this is exactly what I want. I want it badly. But this is one of those moments where we have to play a little bit of the devil's advocate. Market sentiment shifted so dramatically on Thursday, and it was a great day. I mean, it was, you know, the week, the NASDAQ ended the week up 8%, the S&P up almost 6%, the Dow over 4%. So it was a fantastic week. I love to see it. But it's possible that we might have gotten a little too over-optimistic. And I would say the bond market is a great place to look at that, because there was a great chart in Bloomberg this week that laid out the top 10 single days for changes over the last 30 years in 10-year treasuries. Or excuse me, 5-year treasuries, the top 10 days for changes. Nine of those 10 days, nine of them, have all come on significant Fed policy moves. So for example, the biggest single change was September of 2008, when the Fed came out and announced they're bailing out Lehman Brothers. The second biggest was 2009, when the Fed came out and announced the start of quantitative easing. But every single one, nine of those 10 biggest days, were all significant big policy moves. The 10th falls right in the middle of the top 10. It's number 6, was the CPI data on Thursday. We have never in the last 30 years seen an inflation report move the bond market like we saw it move it on Thursday. And so with that, it should be no surprise that the market sentiment of what the Fed is going to do next has also shifted. The market moved sharply towards the consensus that the Fed will change the rate policy and begin slowing rate increases to 50 basis points next month, which, I mean, that'd be great. We would love to see that. And the expectations for peak rates shifted. The peak shifted on Thursday from being slightly over 5% to almost 4.75%. So a whole 0.25% that the market moved the peak rate, or where they believe the Fed will be on the peak rate. But my question is that really going to happen? I'm hopeful. I really am. I think that's probably the outcome here. But we're not there yet to be able to say it's going to happen. The next Fed meeting is on December 14th. Before that Fed meeting, we get the November CPI data. That data comes out on December 13th, one day before. There is no doubt that that inflation report is going to be just as or more important than this inflation report in terms of what the Fed's going to do. We also get the November jobs data on December 2nd. So my only caution here is, listen, I hope the Fed slows the rate increases. I hope what the market priced in on Thursday and Friday is real. But I think we have to remember that it took 2 years or more to dig this inflation and interest rate hole that we are in. It did not all end on Thursday. There is still work to be done. There is work to be done at the Fed. There is work to be done with our CPI numbers. And so while Thursday was an incredibly good, an incredibly positive step, I am happy. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying here. It was great news. But the path forward is not going to be straight. There's going to be variability. There's going to be volatility. And we're going to have to be patient while that happens. Patience is key in this environment. We'll leave it there. I'll look forward to talking with you again next week. I'm curious to see how sticky these market returns are this week after last week's inflation report, and looking forward to talking about that with you. In the meantime, if you have questions, please don't hesitate to give us a call here at the office at 515-273-1333 or visit us on the web at www.insightwealthgroup.com. That's it for this week. I hope you have a wonderful week. Take care.
Securities offered through Arete Wealth Management, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, NFA. Investment advisory services offered through Arete Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment firm.